and welcome to Wait What, the history quiz where we laugh at the past to keep from weeping about the present. I'm your host, Phil Ahrensberg. I'm a history nerd with a passion for illuminating the darker crevices of the human story. I'm joined, as always, by a panel of guests, hopefully charming and witty. Anything's possible. Let's meet them now. First off, we have my writing partner, Ukrainian Foreign Legionnaire and devourer of peacocks, Aaron Carr. Aaron, how's it going?
I don't have any peacocks with me, indeed, but if we do this again, I'll make sure to rectify that.
Excellent, excellent. Next, he's the best dungeon master I know. You can decide D&D or BDSM. Please welcome local resident, your pal and mine, Dan Love.
Hello, everyone, and please figure that out for yourself later.
How's it going, Dan?
Oh, everything is just as hunky-dory as could possibly be. And once again, I'm in your future.
And you're in Long Island?
I am on Long Island. No one has ever been in Long Island unless they're buried.
Right. My bad.
See.
How's Long Island these days?
It's warm and muggy, so it's springtime on Long Island, which means it's summer.
Excellent. Excellent. And then finally, she's an author, educator, and shit stirrer. Welcome back to the show, Heather Walpert-Garin. How you doing, Heather?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. You know, I'm like eating peacocks. I'm like, I live in an area where there's literally like fines for hitting the local peacocks. Like, yeah. We have peacocks all over the city.
I grew up in the land of moonshine and meth lab. So like not realizing that like this was probably somebody's pet, what he's referencing is when I was a kid, I saw one in the woods and shot it and ate it. And then realized like 2 years ago that peacocks aren't actually native to the Northwest, and I definitely ate somebody's peacock.
And just to clarify, it's not like you shot it and then like pounced on it. You cooked it first.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Like, there was a long pause there on that one.
Long on.
And I'm more thinking that nah, you ate it right there. Still steaming in the woods.
We've got peacocks in people's yards over here that just walk the streets, and so you cannot hit them with your car.
They make the worst noise.
They're loud. They are loud. They eat all of our tomatoes.
You're daring me to hit them with a car. I'll start now so I can get there tomorrow.
They look at themselves in their car. They're like, you slow down, and they're just like admiring themselves. And
well, that's pretty on brand, though, right?
They're dinosaurs, man.
All right, well, let's get down to it. The format around these parts here is simple. I'll describe some strange event or person from history and ask the panel questions about it. Delicious, nutritious points will be awarded based on those answers, and the person with the highest score wins. Today's explorers on the wild frontier of time will be competing, as always, for bragging rights and a box of Cap'n Crunch cereal. Today's topic, time after time. No matter how you think it works, time is much more complicated and weird than our human brains can comprehend. People from H.G. Wells to Albert Einstein have been trying to get a handle on just how the temporal universe clicks. And so far, every new insight seems to create even more confusing concepts. We're going to look at some folks who may have broken the time code. Today, we examine chrononauts, time travelers, and immortals.
By the way, I love chrononauts in the morning with a cup of coffee. They're really good.
They're fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Good.
I think we used to watch that with the kids. You know, it was either chrononauts or octonauts or something like that.
Octonauts.
That's when there are
octonaut
eight.
Octonaut just anyone traveling who there's eight of them?
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They could be inside a human body or in a spaceship, but there's eight of them.
Eight of them.
So, panel, aside from the normal way we travel through time, ostensibly forward, with cause coming before effect, do you think time travel is possible, and if so, what kind? Let's start with Dan.
As someone who has never been good at causality in one direction, I am truly hoping it's not possible in the other, because I assume I would mess that up even worse. But is it possible? Sure, why not? At this point, yeah, I believe anything at this point. I believe in Spider-Man, so I'm perfectly willing to believe in both time travel and time and space travel, for those of you playing along at home.
Well, right, because if you move in time, presumably the whole universe is expanding and the planet is orbiting and the galaxy is flinging through space, so you gotta...
Yeah, you have to move both in space and time.
Right.
Because if you don't, you wind up in the orbit of Venus or something. And, you know, you want to go to the French Revolution, so good luck on that.
Right.
There you go.
Heather, how about you? Backwards and forwards time travel possible?
I'm a believer in the eventuality of it all. You know, humans are just freaking amazing, right? So it's like whatever we think of, we eventually make happen. So considering we dreamt it up, I think that it is absolutely possible that it will happen the way we're dreaming eventually, you know? I don't know. There's that whole burrito theory of like layered times. There's, you know, the whole wormhole theories. And I mean, I just think we'll pick away at this thing before until we get it.
Wow. Sounds like we got a ringer here, boys. Didn't realize we brought in the pro from Dover. Aaron, how about you? Time travel.
Well, I'm a huge Trekkie, but I also had Michio Kaku and Roger Penrose break my heart when I got older, and they're like, probably not. I want it to be true. I'll say that.
All right. So let's look first at some internet time travel, because, of course, the internet has become a warehouse of bizarre stories and dubious facts about time travelers. Like creepypasta or Timu, proof of supposed time travelers has sprouted up on the web like mushrooms on a dead log. These time travelers typically have appeared mysteriously on bulletin boards and subreddits, or there's a picture somewhere, usually some kind of digital public space. Has anyone heard of Chaplin's time traveler?
No, and now I want to.
Well, I know. That's, I'm glad. I like to be intriguing. Well, great. Well, so here's the deal. In October of 2010, Irish filmmaker George Clark uploaded a video clip entitled Chaplin's Time Traveler to YouTube. It's a piece of footage from very, very early when there were just, this is like just past zoetropes. Like it's one of the first motion picture cameras. And it's just a street scene in front of a Charlie Chaplin movie. And there's a woman who walks by. And she's holding an object to her ear. Clark says, on closer examination, she's talking into a thin black device, and it appears to be a phone. So Clark concluded that this woman was possibly, probably, a time traveler. The clip received millions of hits and was the subject of televised news stories. Has anyone seen it?
I vaguely remember. Yeah, I remember hearing about this now. Now, I have not seen it, but I remember hearing about a woman or somebody appearing in film that is doing anachronistic activities. I'm now intrigued to see the video.
I mean, you just go to YouTube and put in Chaplin's Time Traveler. You can see it.
I saw something either on Mythbusters or the White Rabbit Project or something like that, you know, where they may have had some kind of clip.
Well, I have seen it.
You have.
You know, it's like a medium long shot of the street and sidewalk in front of a theater. And there's like a fake elephant out front. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Oriental theater and mysteries of the East kind of, you know, kind of caricature. And there are people walking by and yeah, a woman walks by and she's got like what looks like a cell phone up to her ear. And it appears that she's talking into it. And they do a few close-ups and, you know, it, yeah, sure. It could be someone talking into a cell phone. It could also be a hearing aid.
I think the important thing is anytime anything is confusing, even like you lose your car keys or forget where you put your hat, the important thing is to assume either time travel or aliens. Just always, right off the bat.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Blanket statement there. Yeah, at any time.
Go there first. Definitely obviously. Go there first.
Yeah, right. I mean, the simplest explanation is usually cosmic horror.
Right, right. This woman is obviously not talking into a cell phone. This woman is attempting to summon Cthulhu on the streets of New York.
Exactly.
And it is doing so by speaking into a piece of formica.
No, I've lived in New
very
York,
moment,
and that's just,
in the very moment yeah. they started filming... You know, movies.
Right,
like
exactly.
Started. Right, exactly.
Wait, yeah. Like, yeah, man, I got to get this thing going.
But that's just a standard behavior for any New Yorker on a Thursday. I mean, like, yeah, I live in Brooklyn. That's just what you do.
Yeah, I got to admit, a woman speaking into a black object in semi-industrial times, that wouldn't even rank in New York City. That, you know, like, call me back when she's talking to a live crab or perhaps performing open heart surgery or something, then yeah, sure. But apart from that, she's not even wearing a funny costume.
She's got a hell of a hat. I will say that.
True. Yes, we'll give her that.
A slightly more famous version of this is a photograph genuinely authenticated as being from 1941 of the reopening of the South Fork Bridge in Gold Bridge, British Columbia. It's known as the time-traveling hipster. And it's a picture of a guy who has a very kind of fashion-forward haircut, like from our time, contemporarily, you know, like a hipster haircut, wearing sunglasses and holding a camera that seems very, very small for 1941. So based on his clothing, his sunglasses, and the camera, people assumed and of course, fought vociferously over the fact that this guy was a time traveler. So here's the deal. These are pretty easily disproved, or proven, I guess. To me, it seems like a case of pattern recognition, right? Like we see something that we recognize and immediately, you know, we fill in the blanks. Like, you know,
there are DNA patterns, right? Like doppelgangers. I mean, there's the whole Daniel Radcliffe series of photos, third time if you've seen those.
Right. Right, or Woody Harrelson carved into a wall in a German castle.
Maybe it just speaks to the timeless nature of the hipster. Perhaps there has always been the hipster, and there will always be the hipster. Will there be hipsters in the orbit of Saturn? Were there hipsters at the founding of Angkor Wat? Probably. Probably some guy who said he saw it before and it was cooler when he did it. I'm going to assume.
Angkor Wat's cool, but he's seen the original live.
I saw the original in a small club in L.A., and there were like five people there. And yeah. That was when it was real, man, before Angkor Wat sold out.
Napoleon Bonaparte was a huge Mumford & Sons fan. Like, that's a historical fact.
Sure, exactly. You know, Moses was a big fan of manual type.
Moses, you know, I mean, exactly like Daniel Radcliffe, too, as it turns out.
Well, it's like, you know, there's a guy with what looks like a bubble over his head and a hieroglyph, and the ancient aliens industry is born.
Sure.
Now, that being the case, I'm going to pose another question to you guys for points.
Oh, uh-oh.
What would a time traveler look like? Aaron, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, I mean, so we're like assuming it's not in a Mylar suit with a lightning bolt on the front.
Well, I don't know. I mean, are they gonna try and blend in, or are they gonna wear their like future clothes?
Have you seen them just appearing in our time?
Like, you know, if I'm going to travel back in time, like, you know, like I'm gonna try to blend in, but I'm also kind of lazy. So if I was going back to the Old West, I would probably base it on, like, the film Rhinestone Cowboy. Like, so, you know, just anyone you see who's, like, dressed weird or slightly sloppy, probably a time traveler, which lends credence to our idea of the time-traveling hipster.
Yeah, I'm going to say.
Time travelers.
Yeah.
Let's go to you. What are time travelers going to look like?
Well, I originally was going to say Rip Taylor. 70s prop comic, but just because you might as well draw attention to yourself, you're violating all the laws of space and time. Go for it. You know, let people know you took the effort. But now I gotta say, Rhinestone Cow is probably my answer.
Regardless of the time period,
regardless. Like I'm just cowboy. Wearing this and you could just cope. Cause anywhere else you go, people's response is just gonna be, wow, that guy looks sharp. I mean, pretty much anywhere you land in space-time. Yeah. Even, you know, sort of the courts of China, rhinestones are still going to be popular.
Well, they go with everything. How about you?
And they're slimming.
No, I'm thinking, again, because we actually have a blueprint for this in science fiction, whether it's Michael Crichton or whether it's Trek, you know, the fact is that people knew enough to at least change their outer garments, you know? So I just kind of feel like that would be the first step is at least throwing on the local cape or hat, you know, to blend in.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to have to bring up, you said outer garments.
Yes.
Do you wear period appropriate undergarments?
I think I think while we have seen them on occasion, it always strikes me as weird because why would I want to wear those as a woman, like a corset and like
exactly.
all the layers and shit? Like, no, no, no. I've advanced beyond that. I'm bringing sanitary napkins.
Sure.
I'm bringing some Advil. I mean, I am bringing all the things that would make me comfortable in a far more uncomfortable time period, but I am going to wear the garb.
But you're going to wear the appropriate pants.
Correct.
Or lack thereof.
Or right. lack thereof. Correct.
Can you guys show of hands so it's a who isn't wearing Victorian undergarments? Like,
Say that again.
One more time, Aaron.
One more time.
Well, I said, can we get a show of hands of who isn't wearing Victorian undergarments?
Like, I will say...
I'm just going to let the record show that no one has raised their hand. So let's move on. lastly, we have an anonymous person on Reddit. And this is a post from 2023. And it's titled, I'm a time traveler from the year 2345. I'm so sorry for what's coming.
Right. Yeah.
For starters, less than two or three decades from now, we will have the cure for cancer and other major debilitating diseases. And they can be administered from a simple vaccine shot. So no problems there.
Nobody's going to regret that.
Yep. Gasoline is banned by the halfway point of the 21st century. But the synthetic fuel means people aren't forced into electric cars, which the time traveler was extremely happy about because, quote, it meant I could keep driving my Cadillac DeVille around. And finally, time travel was invented by a venture capitalist in 2340. And here we are. So this guy sounds horrible.
Super credible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But what do you think are some of the horrible things that happened between now and 2345? Heather, let's start with you.
Well, I don't know if I can talk specifically because the only thing that's running through my head right now is like that really blurred montage from the old Time Machine movie. Do you know what I mean? When he like zips up the velocity of the time machine and you just see like all, everything going nuts and then the buildings disappear and there are bombs and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I mean, I think we're always in cycles, right? Things will get worse. Things will get better. Things will get worse. Things will get better. We'll be at war. We'll be at peace. We'll be at war. We'll be at peace. That's what I think is going to happen.
All right. Aaron, any predictions between now and 2345?
Oh, I think
Oscar picks maybe?
Yeah, I've heard that history is cyclical, so I'm hearing, like, I think Spartacus will win again.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It wins on a cycle. I'm sure terrible things will happen, and we could think of all of them. I'm still fascinated by the fact that at least 200 years and change, the Cadillac is still a thing, and they still have a DeVille.
Right. Like, that's the thing that really adds an air of credibility.
Right.
To it.
And the old man coughed. Like suddenly the story takes on a realer tone because wait. It's like 300 years and change. Cadillac is still a thing? How long has been Cadillac? Or did they come back?
He's a tinkerer.
So you don't like classic cars is what I'm hearing? Like, that, you know.
He's driving around a 300-year-old car, which would be like, I'm a tinkerer. I sail a birch canoe. Like,
yeah, that's what, you know.
Really? Wow.
It's like the way I drive around in a phaeton.
Exactly.
But I think it's been jacked up with a couple rockets on the back,
things like that,
so it can function.
Right.
But he can still
use synthetic fuel.
There you go.
I only get around in the Flintstones car with the big stone like tube on the front.
And your feet.
Right. You're driving around with both feet. You gotta get the kids in the back to pedal along with.
Counterbalance that big order of ribs.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the how of time travel, which is to say, let's briefly look at some time machines.
Ooh, I'm in the market for a time machine, so I'm hoping it's a good.
Our first time machine comes to us fresh from the end of World War II. It's called Die Glocke, German for the bell. And it was a purported top secret scientific technological device, one of many Nazi wonder weapons. developed or supposedly developed towards the end of the war. Like all fictional weapons and Nazi occult doodads, the bell was supposed to turn the war around and deliver complete victory to the Reich. It was first fully described by a Polish journalist and author named Igor Witowski after the war. He described slave labor working on it and how it looked when it
on
worked.
On brand.
Yep. and apparently it also ran on occult energy.
Orgone.
Yeah. you know, and it hovered. It was one of these wingless aircrafts that are supposedly based on alien magic, and it could travel through time.
Exactly.
So here's my thought on this. Whenever you look at weird stories, genre stories that take place at the end of the war, right? Hellboy, something like that. You got your moon bases, your arcs of the covenant, your spears of destiny. You're right. It's all so pulpy. And outside of the Nazis, I find it kind of sentimental and cute that they're trying to put together, like, you know, a giant flying wing or a series of war wheels.
Sure. Nothing. It's a sign that we weren't alive at the time. That Nazis, even though they're back for some reason, you know, you think about sort of big gray things with rivets and stuff that Bugs Bunny might have built, but it also hovers and has a wing and it's got like a robot with a light on it. It's just, it's everything you ever want science to be.
Just want like more pulp sci-fi tech for other like no longer existing empires. Like I want like the Ottoman Turks to have like their time machine. And I think Polish Lithuanian Commonwealth needs their robotic laser dinosaur. It just seems unfair that the Nazis get all of the pulp technologies.
Because I mean, think of like a Fabergé egg-ridden czarist flying machine that like spins fancy eggs and stuff, and runs purely on the tears of Cossacks or something. Why would you not want that? You're absolutely right, and we could go in time and find them all. Oh, they'd have velour couches. Wouldn't they? Of course they would. Of course they would.
I love the idea of it being a hotel lobby.
Exactly.
I love that.
I'm loving this, Aaron. We got to go do this now. We got to go make a
Romanov time machine.
Make a Lithuanian empire, an Ottoman Empire mechanical time machine.
That plays chess.
Exactly. That plays
In
chess.
In fact, that's how you control it.
Yeah.
A little closer to home, chronologically speaking, in April 2013, the Iranian news agency Fars carried a story claiming a 27-year-old Iranian scientist had invented a time machine that allowed people to see into the future. A few days later, the story was removed and replaced with a story quoting an Iranian government official that no such device had been registered.
I can't help but think about like the romper room mirror. You know what I'm saying? I don't know why that's in my head, but it's like, I see war, and I see the Oscars, I see vaccinations.
And Pope Innocent the 12th. And
that's right.
Yeah. I just love the conceit of these like various countries and empires who have a time machine, but still are not like doing that great otherwise. Like you think that would be useful. Like, I don't know, if I get a time machine, I think I would just be doing, like, at least 30% more successful than I am right now.
Well, I mean, I think like, Biff was really onto something at Back to the Future when he had the damn baseball stat book or whatever it was, right?
The Sporting Almanac.
The
Sporting Almanac. I enjoy that this Iranian kid supposedly discovered a time machine, and the story wasn't an Iranian kid gets really wrecked on hash and starts going, dude, I can see things tomorrow.
it's like government steps in. But we don't really use it for anything useful. You're just like, you know, oh, I'm a really good engineer, but I'm only capitalizing on like the Beanie Baby craze. And that's as far as I can think of to like really become successful using my time machine.
And remember,
the whole question here is what would you invent? And I think I would definitely invent Post-its. Because that's become like the whole thing in my family. It's like, what are our Post-its? You know, like a little piece of paper, a little gummy on the back, bam, millionaire, billionaire.
Or just invest in it.
Great. That's right. I don't have to invent it.
I mean, I'd kill Hitler, but you know, you do you. Well, that brings us to the end of round one.
Sure.
Let's take a look at some scores here. Well, we've got a barn burner tonight. Aaron and Heather are tied at 20 points each.
Woo-hoo.
And Dan is nipping at their heels with 18 points.
Oh, I got lucky number 18.
So on to round two. We've talked about this bullshit on the internet, which is, you know, clearly Photoshop and lies. But let's talk about some real time travelers.
Nope, that's the appropriate response.
John Titor is the pseudonym used on internet forums between 1998 and 2001 by an individual claiming to be an American military time traveler from the year 2036. His post discussed various aspects of time travel and described future calamitous events, including a global nuclear war that he predicted would take place in 2015.
Well, like it did.
Panel, remember how fun the internet used to be? All the weird shit that was out there.
Sure.
So I'll go one by one. What were you doing when the war of 2015 started? Heather, we'll start with you.
I don't know.
The great nuclear war of 2015.
I don't know, but I don't remember. It's a bit of a blur, 2015, because it was pre-pandemic. But I will say that this does kind of remind me of the whole Y2K thing, or like when my grandma was one of those people listening to War of the Worlds on the radio and shoved, you know, towels under the door to kind of save herself from the Martian gases. And then that was happening around like that Y2K time too with people. Like, I don't know. I don't remember 2015, but I do remember all that bullshit.
Aaron, who fought in the Great Nuclear War of 2015?
Oh, that's a great question.
I'm guessing it was probably the entire world versus the super-powered mecha Ottoman Turks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, we had to go back in time to stop. I mean, we were like really just on death's door there. I mean, it was time travel was the only way we were going to beat those like robotic wind-up Mehmet II like mechas.
Exactly.
Damn, who won that war? Do you remember?
Well, I'd say proudly it was our mechanized overlords, which is why to this day we swear fealty to them every single morning.
Good point.
Thank you.
All glory to the Padishah.
There you go.
So this story fascinated internet communities, but amazingly, his predictions were not accurate. As you can imagine, this created a slight whiff of skepticism about John. A 2009 investigation suggested that the affair was a hoax started by a guy named Larry Haber, a Florida entertainment lawyer. However, the Habers and other subjects have denied these reports, and no one has publicly claimed to be the originator of the Titor posts. Anyone ever heard of this guy?
I'm sorry. I enjoyed that there was an investigation. Determined it was a hoax. Truly, an investigation was there.
Lawyer,
I have not heard.
Entertainment lawyer.
But I have not heard of this person. But I will say, Florida entertainment lawyer. He's someone who's seen the setup of pornographic theater. I'm just saying, he has seen things the rest of us have not. I'm assuming, but I don't know for certain.
I think I might have actually heard this story, and it just keeps going deeper in the weeds and become steadily more insane with every twist. I might be mixing it up, but I seem to recall.
You know, it's funny you mention that. Let's talk about these posts. The first one, Titor first appeared on July 29th, 1998, when he sent two faxes to Art Bell, the host of the popular paranormal-focused radio show Coast to Coast AM. The two faxes told the story of the discovery of time travel in 2034, and the devastation that followed the Y2K disaster. So spot on, right from the jump, this guy.
Thank God those Turkish machines were mechanical, thus
right?
Not susceptible to Western weakness and clockwork.
In these postings, Titer claimed to be an American soldier from 2036 based in Tampa, Florida. As part of the project, he was sent back to 1975 to retrieve an IBM 5100 computer, which was needed to debug various legacy computer programs that existed in 2036. Panel, I'm not a big computer guy, but that doesn't make sense, right? Aaron, you know computers.
I've heard of them. I'm aware that there are computers, like I've heard in books.
But this guy is said to be from 2036. They sent him back to 75 to grab this IBM computer.
Well, I mean,
how big is an IBM computer in 1975?
Did you have to like transfer Whopper like with him? Like, what was that the goal?
Are you talking about the newly introduced sandwich in 1975 or the computer from War Games?
War Games, thank you very much.
I mean, maybe he's just like really clever and he's like, you have to send me back to Studio 54 specifically. So I can
save the
world.
We don't know much about the past, but we knew they used cocaine for currency. You better give me a bunch.
Need to give me a lot of them. And he's just having a great time. And like, I've known soldiers. I've been a soldier. Like, you just lie about shit to like get cool stuff. Like, you know, like when I told my commander, I absolutely had to fire the rocket launcher because it was like mission critical and not because it was awesome.
So Titer talks to Art Bell, and he says that he had been selected for this mission because his paternal grandfather was directly involved in the original assembly and programming of the IBM 5100. He attempted to provide proof of this by describing unpublicized features of the IBM 5100. Titer said that he was then on a stopover in the year 2000 for, quote, personal reasons. Titer also said that for several months, he'd been trying to warn everyone who would listen about the potential threat of a widespread brain disease spread through beef products and about the possibility of an upcoming civil war within the United States. Just got a lot weirder.
Yeah, just getting a little weirder then.
You know what? He sounds like a parent that's trying to find an activity that their kid likes. You just kind of like throw crap at the wall and see what sticks, right? Isn't that what psychics do? Like,
sure, it's called cold reading. And in this case, he was thrown against the wall, brain disease and civil wars. Just, you know, whatever floats boats here. Come on.
Something's bound to be,
right? I've been
a
soldier, and like sometimes you just phone it in. Like, you know, if you just kind of looked at the thing and glanced, civil war in the 1880s, and it's just like, yeah, that's close enough. Like, you know, if you're 300 years in the future, that sounds like a hop, skip, and a jump in a way.
And you're just like, oh, yeah.
So this guy, Lee, you guys got to totally watch out for that. Like, it's a big deal. Like, main wire, we're all, like, on our Tamagotchis and Beanie Baby thing. Like,
And he is a product of an American education system. Even 2030-something's American education system, still going to be an education system where you get out of it and go, you know, I remember there being a civil war, but I remember who fought or why they did it. There you go.
So let me ask you this, panel, 4 points then. Uh-oh. How would you identify an actual time traveler versus an internet Looney Tunes? Dan, let's start with you.
I would say, my goodness, look at that portal of time behind you. And if they turn to look, that's a faker. Because you're a real time traveler. They're a professional. They know there ain't no portals back there. That's how I check them out.
Okay. Heather?
I'm going with jargon. I'm going with idioms and jargon. So my bet is on linguistics.
So someone who comes up to you and says, not to be crying the milk that is on the floor, as you people say.
Yeah, or like Darmek and Jalard at Tanahua type of shit. You know what I mean? Like, and you're just like, wait a minute. Yeah.
23 Skidoo, doll face. I got you, pal.
Yeah, is it someone who's going to be using archaic? Archaic slang because
they've gone from they've come from the past to the future or the future to
future to the past. They don't know how they assume we speak all the same way because it's only been 100.
That's true. That's
it's like
true.
My
they probably call us. What do you think?
Still using
pasterlings.
Pasterlings.
They're still using words like nifty. You know what I mean? It's like that'll be awesome.
Hepcats. I'm smooth to the jive. You're out, buddy. You're out.
Aaron, how do you identify time travelers, or how would you?
Oh, see, I think I would ask, like, what, like, find something that they're super angry about. And if it makes sense at all to you as a modern person, they're just out. Like, you have to be, like, super duper angry about, like, I don't know, like, the chromatic scheme of, like, movies in the last few years, like, how they're kind of, like, becoming slightly more red in hue. And that has to be, like, a cultural flashpoint. If it, like, makes sense, like, you know, or, like, you know, like, if something sounds plausible, 100% they're not from this time.
Okay. Okay.
Still putting pickles on cheeseburgers? You people are mad!
There you go.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, similar to John Titor, there's a man named Bob White. Bob White was a person, or possibly bird, who sent an unknown number of spam emails between 2001 and 2003. The subject of the emails was always the same, that the individual was seeking to find someone who could supply a, quote, dimensional warp generator. Turns out Bob was a time traveler from the future stuck in 2023.
But he was asking for someone to, hey, it's like Craigslist, like, you got a time travel machine? Like, it sounds like he was asking for someone else to provide everything.
Yeah, basically, he was looking for other time travelers. Several recipients began to respond, claiming to have such equipment as the requested dimensional warp generator. One recipient, Dave Hill, set up an online shop from which the time traveler purchased the warp generator, formerly a hard drive motor, while another Dave charged thousands of dollars for time travel courses before he would sell the requested hardware.
I like it. Like it.
Aaron.
Now, so it's just like, I love that. Like, when someone says some crazy thing to you, you don't go, oh, no, that's crazy. You try to out-crazy them. Like, right. Like 110%. Like, right. You know, if somebody tells you that, like, oh, you know, like, you know, if the classic thing about, like, you know, if somebody tells you, like, the moon landing is fake, you deny that the moon is real and say that, like, the government has gotten to them.
Lean on it. Yeah.
Right. Swing for the fences.
Dimensional warp generator? I've got 8. Which model do you want?
Right. And you better pick the right one, because if you don't, it's going to blow out your transwarp address, and that'll be the end of you,
buddy. Come on, that's transwarp 101. Like, everybody knows that.
Exactly. Come on, people. By the way, it's $1,600 to see him.
Exactly. Right. But first, you got to take the course, because we can't let anyone just start operating this equipment.
I mean, I was literally born yesterday because of the loop, but, like, you know, like, I wasn't born yesterday, figuratively.
Right.
Yeah.
It's actual loop.
Finally, we've got the story of Andrew Carlisson, a man who was supposedly arrested in March 2003 by the SEC after making 126 high-risk stock trades and being successful on every one. Carlisson started with an initial investment of $800 and ended with over $350 million. This drew the attention of the feds, and they arrested him. After his arrest, Andy submitted a 4-hour confession wherein he claimed to be a time traveler from 200 years in the future. He offered to tell investigators such things as the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden and the cure for AIDS in return for a lesser punishment and be allowed to return to his time craft. Apparently, a mysterious man posted his bail and Carlisson was scheduled for a court hearing but was never seen again. Records show that he never existed. There's no record of an Andrew Carlisson.
This is awesome.
It's my favorite one.
That's awesome. How to commit a crime.
My ex-wife used to work for the NSA and would repeatedly, very carefully, in the most suspicious way possible, deny that they had aliens. Like, this was like a hobby for her. Like, you know, I can't talk about the aliens, and, like, you know, that's definitely a thing I can't confirm or deny at this time. And I just, like, you know, if I get picked up for just being wildly, wildly lucky, 110%, like, I'm going to do this. Like, if I roll craps 1,000 times in a row, I'll be like, well, it certainly wasn't the telekinesis.
Exactly. I enjoy that obviously your premeditated plan for getting away with stock fraud is I'm from the future. That's the plan. Like, that'll solve it entirely. 110%. 4 hour long doing my one act play, I'm from the future, and I'm going to do the whole thing. I like that the guy who put his bail up is mysterious, because They don't make you sign things to put, you just put up bail. There's no, like, they don't publicize the dude who puts up your bail. You just put up bail and go home. But I love the fact that that was, this is obviously, this is my plan. When I get caught for this obvious crime, I am going to
just that, but imagine being the SEC agent where you're like, oh, yeah, what's your system here doing insider trading? Oh, no, I'm from the future. And you're just like, okay, well, shit, why didn't you say? Like, right. Hey, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, prove it. Where's Osama bin Laden?
Right, prove it.
Hey, he's over there. He's in, all right, we got to let Pensacola. Him go.
Near that camel right. spider.
Sort of in relation to the constant denial, I can either confirm or deny that we have aliens. I work at a national lab, and obviously there are always rumors about things at labs, you know, the kind of stuff, the Stranger Things stuff going on. I will tell you, if there was a flying saucer at the lab I work at, you would all know about it because it would be buzzing your neighborhood constantly. Scientists would love to not be sitting at their desk doing word problems. I could either sit here and stare at this graph, or I could fly a flying saucer. I think I'm going to fly the saucer. Jimmy, I'm taking the saucer out. We're going to go get Sonic, and then I'm going to go buzz the neighborhood. Have a good time with it, kids. See you later. No. We will keep that secret. There are no secrets. That would be completely out in the open immediately.
Exactly what someone would say if they were trying to cover up the existence
exactly.
of a flying saucer. Nice try, Narc.
Yeah.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of round two. Let's take a look at the scores. Well, there has been some jiggery pokery going on. Currently, Aaron is in the lead with 39 points.
Oof.
Followed by Dan in second place with 37 points and Heather with 33 points.
Temporarily relevant.
I got to work on that.
I was able to go into the future and, like, you know, with using my knowledge of the future to, yeah, know these right. questions in advance.
Of course. Yeah. Cool.
That's round nice. Three. Immortals. There is no evidence of actual immortal human beings or things that look like humans.
Just the kind of thing an immortal person would say.
Just those jellyfish, right?
I know. In fact, outside of a couple of species of jellyfish, immortality is considered biologically impossible. Incidentally, those jellyfish use a process called transdifferentiation to replenish cells after sexual reproduction. So basically, they have sex and get younger. And so the cycle can repeat indefinitely. Right. So technically they are biologically immortal. Right. Myth and folklore have always been crammed full of the non-dying, from the Epic of Gilgamesh to Deadpool. Outside of mythology and movies, there are a couple of folks, however, who are rumored to actually still be walking around. So panel, I go to you. Who here out of this three-person panel wants to live forever? And if so, how? What style of immortality are you going to choose?
I think some Jehovah's Witnesses actually asked me this question outside my house when I was like 8 years old.
They probably meant it in a different way than I do, though.
I think they did too, and they're like, little girl, do you want to live forever? And I was like, no, all my friends would be dead. And that was when my mom came outside and was like, get away from her, blah. But I'm just saying.
So no immortality for you just because a friend's dying?
No immortality for me. Nope.
Would you like to live to a very, very, very old age and not wither and turn to dust?
Well, it depends because, I mean, like, is everything else, like, aging? Or, like, what about, like, hey, I broke an arm? Or, like, oh, I broke a tooth? Or, you know, like I don't want to be the husk of Heather, you know?
No, let's assume you're going to be, you know, looking good.
You're 30 forever.
You're 30.
Or 30 for the next 300 years. You taking it?
No, man, don't you get tired? I mean, I'm a woman that needs a nap. I mean, don't you kind of
think about like the 10-year nap you could take though.
Worse.
Dan, how about you?
I've known me since I was a child, and I got to admit, I'm pretty sick of me by now. I've had all the conversations with me I'm ever going to have. My plan for retirement is to turn my on-off switch to off. So living forever, I don't think I could pull it off. But if I had to live forever, how would I want to do it?
Because you've got your sort of Tolkien elves who,
right,
you know,
you got those,
stay young and vital forever.
Young and vital forever. You've got this sort of cartoon, when a safe falls on you, you just pop up next to it and sort of dust yourself off, which I have to admit is kind of the most entertaining one, except you're leaving bodies everywhere you go.
Right. And then, I mean,
you probably got to pay somebody to clean them up. That's not good. I don't like that forever. The other thing is, of course, immortality is inevitably a prison machine. At some point, someone's going to lock you away for something and says, well, you're dying in there. And then you have to sit there going, well, I guess I better learn a harmonica because I'm in prison.
Because I have to wait until this prison disintegrates.
Right. I literally have to wait till the walls of this prison fall down before I can get out of here. So I don't know. Immortality always seems like it seems one of those traps. Unless you're elves. Unless it's, you know, you were made to be immortal and you've been immortal ever since.
Aaron, how about you?
So I'm going to be the odd man out. See, I think the whole point of life is to experience the entire human condition up, down, sideways. And if you're in prison, yeah, what do you care if they stick you in for 40 years? You got the time. It's all you got. You have more of that than anybody else.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm just going to sit there and learn Sanskrit.
Right.
How to play, like, you know, erotic ukulele, like, right. You know,
finally just break the back of infinite jest.
But wait, that does bring me to the question of
notes too.
All the notes, everything on infinite jest. There you go.
Along those lines, like, of experiencing the human experience, like, do we have infinite wealth to travel, to experience all these different cultures, to, you know, to maybe invest in philanthropy and charity and, like, have...
Well, if you think about it, it's
up to you.
You can invest the hell out of other, you know, like, yeah, I'll be back, and I'm going to put this penny in a bank account. I'll be back in 300 years. See you later, kids. Or, you know, I can feel free to invest in the moon now because someday people are going to be living on it and I'm their landlord. So, you know, there's at least that idea.
Become an iterant monk for a century. Just have fun with it. Like, you do everything.
Just have fun with it. Yeah.
One of my favorite characters in comic books is Bob Gadling from The Sandman.
Sure.
He's the guy that he kind of meets up with every, you know, 100
years.
Yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that. And sometimes Hob's going through some hard times, and sometimes Hob is up on, you know, the pinnacle of success, and he's still kind of like, there's still more to learn and still more to experience. And, you know,
well, I love that. How I think I'd like to do it, where I live for as long as I want to.
Okay.
Right. That's where you avoid the prison thing, right? Where
sure.
I don't want to be the person who's like, I'm bored with existence at this point. I've been around for 50 million years and there's no end in sight. Right. I'd like the choice to be able to get off the ride.
Yeah, because otherwise you wind up as king of the roach people, and who wants that?
Right, or well, you're just like you and a bunch of hydrogen.
Don't you want someone to touch base with?
I'm willing to roll the dice on it, you know?
You're willing to roll the dice.
I'll try anything once.
All right.
Yeah. All right, well, we are going to focus on one immortal. His name is Monsieur le Comte de Saint-Germain.
Yeah, I knew it! I'm so excited!
Voltaire said of him, he knows everything and doesn't die. And seemingly, that's true.
That's like Rasputin.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Of his real name and parentage and place of birth, nothing is definitely known. The most accepted version is that he was a Portuguese Jew, but who knows? Whoever he was, con man or immortal mystic, he was a pretty big deal in Europe. He was a diplomat for King Louis XV. He was a frenemy of Casanova. He knew pretty much every European language and could discuss any historical event with seemingly firsthand knowledge. A composer, a violinist, an alchemist, he could remove supposedly the flaws from diamonds, and he told pretty much everyone he met that he didn't die.
He's so insane.
And was seemingly everywhere in Europe throughout the 1700s. So, Dan, obviously you've heard of this guy.
I've heard so much of Le Comte de Saint-Germain. One of the things he was known to do, at least on two occasions, as if I remember properly, was to give someone a gemstone the size of a hen's egg sort of in a kind of passing way. Like, here, have this giant fancy rock the size of an egg. I have several of them on me. He would just do, there are all these stories that are absolutely insane, many of them contradictory. So exciting and so weird.
Yeah, he was very much a diplomat and sort of professional eccentric and spy for various European courts throughout the 18th century. Aaron, have you heard of this guy?
But like, to be fair, every wealthy gentleman of the 1800s was a spy. Like, all of them. It was just like a thing you did when you were of a certain, like, it was like dueling scars. Like, you make more than six figures. Oh, you're just going to work in the intelligence field.
Sure.
It was just like a thing at that time up until about the 1940s.
You got to do something with all the time. Why not spy?
Did people not see an age? I don't understand.
Well, that's a great question, Heather. And to answer that, I will go to the journal of one Countess von Gregory. In Paris, the Countess noted in her journal that she had met a man calling himself the Count of Saint Germain. She was surprised to see him, given she had met another Count of Saint Germain when she was a child some 50 years earlier in Venice, who looked exactly like this one. The Count, unsurprisingly, immediately told everyone present that it was totally him, and then, in fact, he gave everyone giant opals. Yes.
Right. And could this story be a Dread Pirate Roberts? Well, I don't know. Could it?
Who knows?
Who could say? Could it be a convenient story for con men to come into an area? Or could this guy be an immortal who's been around forever, knows everything, and is apparently, if I remember right, he was he's the hermit in the tarot cards, like the famous deck of tarot cards. One of them is him. Supposedly, that was yet another story about him. That's based on me. That's a picture of me there. It's so that kind of insanity.
He appeared in Europe's, in journals and recorded sightings of him somewhere in the early 1700s. He takes part in various but ill-detailed pieces of skullduggery and espionage from various monarchs from Spain to France to Russia and everywhere in between. He was definitely arrested in England in 1745. We have the notable English politician and writer Henry Walpole's account of him. Quote, "The provost of Edinburgh is in custody of a messenger, and the other day they seized an odd man who goes by the name of Count Saint Germain. He has been here these 2 years and would not tell who he is or whence, but professes that he does not go by his right name. He sings, plays on the violin wonderfully, composes, is mad, and not very sensible. He is called an Italian, a Spaniard, a Pole, a somebody that married a great fortune in Mexico and ran away with her jewel to Constantinople, a priest, a fiddler, a vast nobleman," unquote.
A Spaniard, Egyptian, Mascot. Oh, wait, I'm so sorry. That's from Highlander.
It's Highlander. Right, exactly. Keep that in mind. You got that Highlander crossover, that immortality.
Ramirez,
Sean Connery playing an Egyptian guy who traveled to Japan.
That's right. Ramirez.
Never seen Sean Connery and the Comte de Saint Germain in the same room. Exactly, Aaron. Exactly. The Comte de Saint Germain is one of those historical things that if they had taught you in school, you probably would have paid more attention. Because you're like, wait, is any of this real? No, this is probably all gibberish, but it's fun gibberish. So,
supposedly, the Comte dies in Germany in 1785. This news did nothing to dispel rumors of his immortality, however. He becomes a figure in late 19th century, early 20th century occultism. He is rumored to be one of the enlightened masters of the world who lives in Agartha in the center of the earth. He becomes a major figure in Madame Blavatsky's theosophic movement. And theories of the dude having lived at least several hundred years, if not thousands, just become kind of, one of these pillars of occultism that you just see cropping up no matter where you study. Not only did several people claim to have seen him a few years after his death, but he appears in several journal entries well into the late 19th century.
He's a great pillar to base your weirdness on.
He's just this sort of figure that, he's not particularly good. He's not particularly evil. He's sort of flamboyant. and just can like show up like Robin Hood and Ivanhoe, right? And just like, yeah, you know, quick yeah, cameo.
He's just a background character. He's an excellent character to have show up and then leave. Maybe he imparts knowledge to your hero just at the right moment. This weird guy who seems to be alive forever, and then hands you an opal the size of your fist.
Right.
And then plays violin, and then is obviously a spy for the Tudors or something.
To be fair, it's the height of bad etiquette not to hand someone an opal the size of a hen's egg. Like, people right. just, that's I'm sorry. Manners.
Folks, I want to get both of you. Heather, say what you just said.
Oh, I said he sounds like for an NPC D&D character, you know? Just sitting in the
yeah,
background.
Yeah, he's like a great supporting character.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Aaron, what did you say before?
Well, I was just saying it's the height of ill manners not to give someone an opal the size of a hen's egg. Like, I mean, you at least a bottle of wine, but preferably an opal the size of a hen's egg. If you,
if you're a time traveler.
I bet we were a culture that ate peacocks too, by the way.
Sure. If you're a time traveler, you hand somebody a sack of cocaine and an opal the size of your fist.
All right, panel. Question for you. When was the last reported sighting of the Comte de Saint-Germain?
When?
Start with Heather. Give me a year.
Oh, we're guessing? Okay. I'm going with 1910.
Okay.
Is this Aaron? for the cereal?
Just found out there was a Borgia was head of state in like the 1970s. So I'm going to go like really recent and say like 1995.
1995. And Dan, you?
I want to say he was in the background of that Charlie Chaplin video.
That was 1902.
With an opal the size of a hen's egg.
So,
we're all over, but that's good. Or maybe not. I don't know.
No. This is like Price is Right. $1.
Well, Aaron, you are our winner, being closest. Yeah. In the early 1970s, a man claiming to be Monsieur le Comte appeared in upper-class circles in France. Using the current French high society's fondness for magic and esotericism, he quickly became very rich and very well-known. Giving divination and psychic readings to various famous people, he became not only very rich, but a fixture in the rarefied world of the super-rich and esoteric. In 1976, he met the French pop singer Dalida, at the height of her fame. Saint-Germain was a bit of an odd duck, however. He slept with a shotgun under his bed. He also spent a year in prison, as well as being forced to pay a 500,000 franc restitution when he shot a man whom he found naked in his kitchen late one night. Turned out to be the maid's boyfriend.
Right.
He last appeared in public at a party in Saint-Tropez in June of 1983.
Wow.
And supposedly, he's still kicking around. He's all over the internet. You know, maybe he's a vampire. Maybe he's an extraterrestrial.
It's like how Bill Murray shows up at parties all over the place. Like
Exactly. Now, for our final question panel, I have to ask each and every one of you, are you the Comte de Saint-Germain? Let's start with Aaron.
I mean, you can't prove it. So there you go.
Okay, Heather?
I am, but I am only wearing his outer clothes, not...
No period undergarments.
No period undergarments.
Okay. And Dan, are you the Comte de Saint-Germain?
I can neither confirm nor deny that I am the Comte de Saint-Germain, but I can say that I have spent many years in the company of various pieces of French aristocracy. So, take that or leave it. But if you take it, take these opals with you, will you? Because they're cluttering up the place. Getting pretty sick of them.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate everyone's candor. Panel, while I tally up the scores, I go to you once again. What are you going to be doing 3,000 years from now? Start with you, Dan.
Finally getting in a nap. I'd be really tired.
Heather?
3,000 years from now, I'm going to be lying on a beach somewhere wondering if there's anyone else that will cross my path or if I will be alone forever.
And Aaron?
I will be 90% of the way through my reading queue.
I will finally I just understand about this
about Confederacy of Dunces.
Almost there.
Almost there. I'll get through the Silmarillion for the second time. I heard it really picks up when you get like the third way through.
Exactly. Dark Tower. Yeah.
Well, I have the scores right here, and oh my goodness, it is time for quite a coincidence, for we have a tie for first place with 67 points each. This week's winners are Dan and Aaron. Heather coming in second with a very impressive 65. Gentlemen, congratulations on your captain's card.
Oh, there we go. You know, and if we time travel appropriately, we can share the same box of Captain Crunch. If I guess we can go back and start it over again or something. I don't know.
You know, I'm fine tying with a 1,000-year-old immortal. That feels pretty good to me. Like, I call that a win. It's like,
Yeah. I don't know. Because you'd think after 1,000 years, I would have picked up some stuff.
All right. And Heather, we're just going to put you back in the time loop so you can do the show again.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I have so many questions about this, like, your man guy. I got to tell you, I'm leaving with more questions than I have arrived with.
Well, that's our goal here. And that's it for this week's Wait What. Congrats to this week's winners, Aaron and Dan. And Heather, you know, next time maybe you will clutch the laurel of glory. Wait What was hosted, written and researched by me, Phil Ahrensberg. I'd like to thank all my guests once again, Dan Love, Heather Walpert-Garin, and Aaron Clark. And we'll catch you next time when we once more clutch the dagger of knowledge between our teeth and take another dive into the murky depths of human history, prying the pearl of wisdom from the clam of obscurity. Please do you all the podcast things, comment, share, and talk about it on your socials. Thanks so much, everyone, and good night.
Good night, everybody.
Wait What is hosted, written, and researched by me, Phil Ahrensberg. The show is edited by Dern Gleaves, and our music is by Wesley Devine.